Welcome to the fourth United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten, and I'm delighted to welcome today's guest is Andy Cole. Andrew Cole. Andy Cole, it's not bothered. People say, what do you prefer? You're not bothered, are you, Andrew?
I'm not fast at all, to be brutally honest. I've been called worse.
Oh, Andrew.
As many people know, so I'm not bothered at all.
Andrew is from Nottingham and has agreed to do this full interview in a Nottinghamshire accent. Is that right?
I'll try my best.
Do you reckon you could speak for half an hour?
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
When your wife met you, she said she was a bit put off by your accent.
She would say that.
Tell us some words in Nottingham. You don't have to speak for the whole interview.
Some words. I don't even know, you know, and it's been such a long, long time. I think when you leave home at 14 years of age like I did, I mean, to say now what words they use in Nottingham is a tough one. I mean, because I've been away for a long, long time. I'm 41 next month.
So when you go back there, you don't start reverting and calling people duck or whatever they do in Nottingham?
I certainly don't, because it's not often that I go back there.
Andrew obviously played for lots of clubs. Arsenal, Fulham, Bristol City, Newcastle United, Manchester United, Blackburn Rovers, Fulham, Manchester City, Portsmouth, Birmingham City, Sunderland, Burnley and Nottingham Forest. Have I missed any out there?
You've lost me now, mate.
Over 500 games, 229 goals, the second highest scorer in Premier League history and behind Alan Shearer. And that's without taking penalties. You must be quite proud of your little career as a footballer.
I'm very, very proud. I've never been one to bang on about my career or my achievements, especially when it comes to goals and stuff like that. And, you know, I look back at my career, and especially my goal scoring record, with great fondness. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at penalties on average, if you're playing the Premiership for, I don't know, 5 to 10 seasons, whatever it may be, on average, you could get yourself another 10, 15 goals by penalties. So I've always said to people, do you imagine if I did take penalties? That's possibly another 10 to 15 goals on penalties. So I would have been most probably scored more goals than Alan Shearer, if you work it out like that.
Yeah.
That's what makes me even proud of my goal scoring record. Because the majority of the players who are up at the top of the Premiership goal scoring charts, I've all taken penalties.
Yeah.
And I think I'm the only player who's never taken penalties at the football clubs he was at.
You've been retired a few years now. What are you up to? You enjoying life? You missing football?
I don't miss football. I think we always know at some stage it's got to come to an end. And I thoroughly do enjoy, you know, retirement. I'm in a good role at Manchester United, being fortunate enough to be offered an ambassador role, which I thoroughly enjoy. But retirement's been fantastic. Watching my kids grow up and all that kind of stuff, yeah, it's been really, really good.
Devante's playing for City?
My son is, yeah. My son's been there a long time. I always get asked the same question, why is it at Manchester City? You know, and I always say, well, my son was there when he was a kid of 6 years age. And things never changed from there. He was very happy there when he was a kid, so it wasn't the case that I needed to take him anywhere else. Because I never thought he would want to carry on playing football, obviously, because his dad played. And ever since, like I said, he was six, and now he's 17. He's been at the football club, and, you know, we just see how things go.
He's a professional now.
He turned pro on his 17th birthday. Well, just after his 17th birthday, he turned pro, which is naturally very exciting times for Devante. And naturally, I'm a very proud father. My son has turned professional, but he's just to start the ladder. You know, if he's going to go the full way, you know, he's going to have to put in a lot of hard work, which he understands. You know, but I'll keep saying, just enjoy it.
Is he like you? Does he play like you?
He will be different to me. If he does make as a professional footballer, he will be totally different. And that's the way I want it. I want him to be different to me.
Be his own man.
I never want anyone to say, oh, he plays like his dad or whatever it may be. I want him to be totally different, which is a good thing.
We invited readers to send questions in for you. The first one's from Molly, who wants to know, who is your favourite strike partner and why?
My favourite striker, I think the understanding I had with Dwight was fantastic, because it worked so well and we achieved so much. And I'll have to say that was most probably my most enjoyable partnership, because we were two opposites as people. And especially when it wasn't meant to be in the first place, that I think that gives me even more delight that it worked out so well.
Mm. You still keep in touch with Dwight?
I see him every now and then. You know, like I said, we're two opposites. You know, and Dwight, Dwight's still living the dream. You know, and I'm no longer.
People assume that you are sort of exactly the same as people, but you just said you're opposites. I've seen you both together. You're completely different, aren't you?
Oh, for sure.
Why?
Sure. I think anyone who knows, obviously, Dwight and knows me, I mean, just the way we live our life, you know, people perceive me as quiet and whatever, and I might give that notion that I'm quiet, but on the flip side, that I love a laugh, I love a joke, and I'm comfortable with people that I know. You know, Dwight is totally opposite. Dwight is very outgoing. I mean, Dwight wants to know everyone to know that Dwight's about and that kind of stuff, and that's why we're totally opposite. I'm the kind of guy, I'll chill out happily in the corner with friends and whatever, and Yorkie want to know it. Everyone that is in the party or whatever it may be. And that's where we're totally different people.
Second question from Leroy Eric. Andy, you played in a golden era for United kits. What was your favourite?
Black. The black one. I love that black kit. I've always said to people, when you put on that black kit, you always look so menacing. You know, and I always say to people, when people used to play against Man United, we used to wear that black kit. You could see the fear. Oh, jeez, we play Man United. This black kit is menacing. I love that black kit. I mean, that was one of my favourite kits at Man United.
The same person's asked a very similar question. Andy, you played during an era of some particularly disgusting United kits. Which one did you dislike most?
Bray.
Southampton.
The Bray one was shocking. It was minging.
Yeah.
And then we had the blue one as well. Oh. The blue one was terrible. It was like a rugby shirt. It was so thick. Oh, it was horrible. Those two kits, possibly the two worst kits.
Next question is from Shirley in Brixton, who sounds remarkably like your wife, actually.
I was just about to say, it sounds like my wife, yeah?
She wants to know, when you've had a few drinks, why do you wrap things around your neck like scarves?
When you say that again?
Shirley from Brixton, who sounds remarkably like your wife, says, ask my husband why, when he's had a few drinks, he wraps scarves around his neck.
Why is my wife asking me that?
Well, I have no idea.
Jesus, it's not as if she's not known me for 20 years.
Is it true?
It certainly is true, yeah.
So what do you do? Do you just like pick up a scarf when you've had a few drinks?
Nah, it's not like a scarf. It's like a neckerchief.
So does that go back to like being a teenager in Nottingham and like having your first taste of alcohol and suddenly try to sort of grab a Notts County scarf?
It's not that. It's, I think when in the olden days, when obviously people used to dress up, they always used to wear like cravats or neckerchiefs and stuff like that, you know, because it's very smart, you know. So I always used to wear a neckerchief or whatever it may be. I mean, like I said, when I have a few drinks, I'm a happy drunk.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a laugh and joke, and I put my neckerchief on. That's what everyone says, oh, yeah, Coley's had a few drinks, having a laugh and joke, because that's just the way I am. You know, I always have a laugh and joke when I have a few drinks.
Remo, next question. He wants to know, have you ever spoken to Neil Razor Ruddock since he broke your leg? And allegedly boasted about it. Well, he did. It's not allegedly. He has boasted about it. You've never spoken to him.
He has boasted about it. I got asked that question just the other day. You know, I read his piece in 442.
Yeah.
When he said, he did what? He done me in a tackle or whatever. And to be honest, he's not really bothered about it because he didn't particularly like me or whatever maybe. And to be brutally honest, I mean, the feeling's mutual.
Mm.
I mean, it's no drama to me. The same way I answered the question the other day, I'll answer it like I do now. My career went on to achieve what I achieved at Manchester United after me breaking my leg. against Liverpool in a reserve match. After that, me breaking my leg in a reserve match, my career went further forward and I achieved things I never, ever believed I would achieve. In the other flip side of that, on his career path, after he broke my leg, what did he achieve?
Not a lot.
That's why I look at it.
A previous guest on this podcast, Peter Hooton, big Liverpool fan, said he was embarrassed when he read what Ruddock had said about you and said that man was never fit to play for Liverpool. So if a Liverpool fans are saying that, it's, you know, he isn't seen as an Anfield legend. Some more questions. Daniel Welbeck, what's your view of him at United at the moment? Didn't you tell me that you'd had words with him at the start of last season, told him he had to be a bit more clinical?
Yeah, last season on tour, on pre-season tour. And I just said that Dan is obviously enjoying it. I mean, Danny just needs to make up his mind what he wants to be. I mean, I think he's got all the attributes. He's quick, he's strong, he's skillful. Now, ultimately, you've got to make up your mind. Do you want to score goals? Yeah, or do you want to get involved in doing the other stuff and be a goal provider or whatever, or a goal scorer, fantastic goals, and only end up with 10 a season? I mean, when you have all the attributes like Danny has, he's got to make up his mind what he wants to be.
What should he be?
I think he can score goals. You know, he's just got to get in the right areas to score goals. And I think to a certain stage last season, he was doing that. He was getting in the right places and scoring goals or whatever. So, I mean, like I said, he's got all the talent to be a fantastic player for Manchester United, for sure. For sure. So hopefully he'll make up his mind where he wants to be, because, I mean, he can be whatever he wants to be.
Did you feel for Dimitar Berbatov and his situation at Manchester United?
You always feel for players when in a situation. However, look, the boy's a talented boy. You know, and in the end, it didn't work out the way he wanted to work out. And I mean, you listen to what he's saying at the moment, you can see naturally he's very, very disappointed. You know, but that is football. You know, to miss out on the European Cup final the way he did, he's very disappointed about that. And I think he's made his feelings known about that.
When were you happiest in football?
When was I happiest? When I was a kid. When you're a kid, you're always happy playing football. Because ultimately, you're under no pressure. You play, you enjoy it. You know, you enjoy it as much as you can. And then once you start to get older and when you start thinking about football, you know, I think that's when it becomes tougher. You know, so naturally, you enjoy it more when you're a kid. But I have to turn around and say, I enjoyed every part of my footballing career. The ups, the downs, because the downs make you a stronger person. So when you get back to the ups, you totally understand the downs. And when you're down, you totally understand the ups. So I thoroughly enjoyed all of it, to be brutally honest.
Was there a day when football broke your heart?
No, not at all. I always say to myself, I was very, very fortunate to achieve something that I always wanted to do when I was a kid. Want to be a professional footballer ever since I was a young boy. And for me to play at the highest level like I did and to achieve the stuff that I achieved, no, not for me.
Who's the funniest player you played with?
Funniest? Oh, I've come across many. Batty's funny. David May was funny. Giggsy. Roy Keane was very funny.
Why was Roy funny?
Roy was funny because he was dry. He was dry but funny. A lot of people might say, oh, he was this. And I got on very well with him. And he's got a very dry sense of humour. Very, very dry sense of humour.
And he was sharp, with it.
Very sharp. Very, very sharp.
And if he wasn't happy with something going on the pitch, what would he do?
He'd let you know. I played with, Sean Davies at Fulham. At Portsmouth. Sean Davies is a very funny boy as well. So you always come across loads of different boys who are very, very funny.
You once told me about Roy chasing Gary Neville around the dressing room at Coventry away. What happened there?
I just had a bit, not on a set to. It was funny. At Highfield Road, we didn't play particularly well, and Roy felt like he had to let Gary Neville know. So he ended up chasing around the dressing room at Highfield Road, and that was mostly one of my funniest things in football, to see Gary Neville run around the dressing room at Highfield Road. It was so, so funny. But that's what football brings, you know, it's things like that.
So he was chasing him around in circles?
Yeah.
And Gary sort of managed to stay just ahead of him. He didn't get caught.
No, it didn't, because Highfield Road was a very strange dressing room that had like three big pillows in a dressing room. You know, so to get around those pillows and to try and catch him was funny. Especially when you got all the plays in there as well. Yeah, I remember like it was yesterday.
And you were laughing at this or thinking...
Oh, I was laughing.
But Roy, laughing. Roy wasn't.
The majority of the boys were laughing as well, you know, because you don't expect things like that. You know, but you have a laugh and joke about it and then you move on.
What have you made of United so far this season?
Tough away games to Everton. Take nothing away from Everton. I think they deserve the 3 points because they played particularly well. The game against Fulham, I thought, after going a goal down, which I think sometimes we need at Old Trafford, you know, to liven us up. The goal 3-1 in front, I thought, possibly 5 or 6. In the second half, you know, it's just like we relax a little bit, i.e. last season we did the same thing against Liverpool and Liverpool get a goal and we end up winning the game 2-1 as if we was hanging on. And then we go to Southampton and same again. I thought Southampton played particularly well. You know, but you never can write us off. I mean, we come back from a 2-1 deficit and go on to win the game 3-2.
Van Persie's had a good start.
He certainly has. If you look at someone like Van Persie, he will always... staying fit, he'll always score goals at a team like Manchester United because he creates so many chances. And to see him get off to such a flying start is brilliant. Now, the most important thing is, like I said before, you keep him fit, you're going to have a great chance of winning the league.
Kagawa looks decent too.
He's a real good player. I think for him to come to the Premiership, which is virtually the same as the Bundesliga, however you look at it. You know, he's had a decent start to his Premiership career, and I think, yeah, he'll score goals for Manchester United, and they'll create a hell of a lot of goals as well.
Mm. How do you think United will do this season? Win the league?
I'm hoping they can win the league. Like I say, if you've got someone like Robin Van Persie who's going to score goals, waiting to come back, he score goals, you know, you keep goals out the other end, you've always got a chance of winning football matches. And if it's ever to come down to goal difference again, you'd like to be the boys you got up front. Wayne, Van Persie, Danny Welbeck, Chicharito, you can have half a chance.
You mentioned Wayne. I was at Goodison. I was disappointed with how he played and he's been injured since then. Will having a break help him refocus and get his fitness back?
You naturally believe so. And I think what another added incentive could be, or I mean, keep him looking over his shoulder, is Van Persie coming in. Because now the manager can turn around and say, well, if Wayne's not playing particularly well, I've got a world-class striker in Robin Van Persie who I can play. The manager did it in the Fulham game. He left Wayne out and played Van Persie. You know, so now he's a little livener, just like when we were playing the four strikers we had at the manager's disposal then. You know, at any stage, if he believes someone wasn't doing it, give them a livener and leave them out of the team. And I think he can do that again now.
And did that work for you? Did he ever pull you to one side and say... you've not quite been training as hard or not been playing as well as I'd hope. I'm resting you this week.
Wasn't the case of training hard. I mean, he left me out for the last game of the season in 99 against Tottenham.
Yes.
You know, so that was a little livener for me, you know, and I come on and, you know, I end up getting a winner.
How did you feel when he told you? How did you feel before the game?
I'm not sure you're devastated because the last game of the season you need to win and you think you've had a half decent season, but hey, that's what football's all about, you know. The manager gives that little shot that you need and you come out fighting and you end up getting the winner and we've gone to win the league and things from there.
And you came on and scored in that match, a great goal.
Yeah, I certainly did. Yeah, it wasn't a case of, that's for the manager. It's a case of, hey, we want to win the league here. We worked extremely hard. We played 37 games. One more game, if we win this game, we're going to win the league. So I think that was my personal aim and the team aim was, if I can get the winner so my team wins the league, I'm more than delighted with that.
That was Martin Edwards' favourite goal, no less, that one against Tottenham. If you had to pick...
I'll take that. If the German's having it, I'm having it.
I reckon you've just colluded with him because you live near him. You've told him to say it in every interview. If you had to pick one moment as a United player, a standout moment where you thought, this is just brilliant, what would it be? Or was there more than one?
I would have to say, if I look back and say, this is what it's all about. Obviously, winning the European Cup, the new camp, in the last few months were crazy. And then you look round, and I took 5 minutes out for myself and watching the boys celebrate and looking at the fans celebrate and say to myself, wow, this is what dreams are made out of. So this, you grow up the kid, want to play in a European Cup final, and look at this. You know, I couldn't ask for anything else.
So you're looking around the 60,000 United fans in the biggest stadium in world football, beautiful night, and you're just thinking, this is just wonderful.
Yeah, I couldn't ask for anything else, you know. Coming from where I've come from, watching the European Cup final, watching, obviously, Division One Championship, teams winning that, watching teams win the FA Cup, and to achieve that all in one season, and just to sit back and look at it and address it and say, wow, you've come a hell of a long way to achieve this, you know what I mean? It's just something that I'll never, ever forget.
Did your family come over to Barcelona?
No, my family didn't. It's only my, obviously, Shirley at the time. Mm. And Shirley took her sister. And that was it.
And you've always said your dad's more interested in cricket. Could you not have got him over to Barcelona, even though it was the final?
I don't think my old fella would have been interested in it. You know? I've always lived my career that way. I've always lived my career and doing that what I need to do, because that what I wanted to do was play football. Mm. Now, yeah, fair enough, my dad would have been supporting me from home, from the armchair or teletexting those days or watching a video print or whatever it may be. But, you know, you get to that stage, you say to yourself, well, I've gone a hell of a long way without my old fella coming to watch me play football, so it's going to make no difference to me now, you know? Mm.
Teddy and Ole Gunnar scored them goals in Barcelona. You didn't get on with Teddy off the field, but on it, you had a good relationship. Were you absolutely buzzing when he scored?
Like I just touched on beforehand, for me, it wasn't about individual goals for me. Never has been. I've always believed that I've been a team player throughout my career. So if Ole scored and Teddy scored, I'm absolutely delighted. Just by the semi-final or the quarter-finals or the last eight, when I was scoring goals, my teammates are delighted for me because that means we progress to the next round. So it made no difference to me who scored, so long we won. Hmm.
And then after the game, you said well done to both of them.
Not a problem.
Yeah. The semi-final wasn't bad in Turin.
Yeah. The semi-final was was better than the final for me.
For me, it was. As a fan, I enjoyed it. You can't help how you feel, but at half-time in Turin, I've never felt that way about watching any game of football in my life.
So come back the way we did after that and to do everything, it was just a great, great feeling to know that we've gone to Turin, no teams won in Turin, we've gone there, 2-0 down, we come back, we beat them 3-2, and this is a team performance of the highest calibre. Most probably, you won't see another team performance like that. People talk about the Liverpool one in, obviously, the European Cup final against AC Milan in, was it Istanbul, was it?
Yeah, 2005.
But I just thought that the way we come out, the team camaraderie, everything, second half was phenomenal.
And that was against an absolutely brilliant team with Zidane, Deschamps.
Possibly one of the best Juventus teams, if not one of the best Italian club team that there was.
And to beat them 3-2 away. 4,000 United fans there that night. What difference did the away fans make?
Yeah, fans always make a big difference. And I think when going 2-0 down and then obviously having the team talk from the manager at half-time and then coming out and listening to the punters get behind you the way they do, it's a big, big plus, major plus. You know, and I think ultimately to have played the way we did second half, a lot of it's down to the fans. You know, because they give you the inspiration to propel yourself forward when things are not going too well for you.
Are you optimistic about the future of Manchester United?
For sure. For sure. Naturally, the manager can't go on forever. We all know that. But I think the football club, i.e. player-wise, is in great hands. Scholes, Giggs, you're going to come to their retirement age within the next year or so, but you'd like to believe that there's going to be players that come in that will propel the team forward, and the young players that have been at the football club that are in the first team now will bring the team forward.
Got a selection of quick fire questions for you now. Not going to try and catch you out, but I might do. What's the tallest building in Manchester?
The Hilton, is it?
Yeah, the Beavram Tower, but that's a Hilton. You can have that. Do you say nanny or narny?
I say nanny.
What's the capital of Jamaica?
Kingstonian.
How many years has Jamaica been independent?
50.
Who's Manchester United's greatest ever player?
Greatest ever player voted the other day.
Right, in your opinion?
In my opinion?
Yeah.
Wow, my opinion. I don't know. There's far too many.
Pick one.
Pick one.
You were talking about Brian Robson last time I spoke to you. Like, you were ignoring him.
I never, obviously, because I missed out on playing with Robbo. And everyone talks about Robbo as a fantastic captain and player. I played with some fantastic players as well. And there's great players before me, obviously, Dennis Law and players like that. So to pick one of all time, it's a tough, tough one. I can't do it.
Where is Filbert Street?
Leicester.
What was the first...
Old stadium, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. What's the first record you bought?
First record? Most probably someone like Loose Ends or Mantronics.
Who's the best player you ever played against?
Played against Zidane.
Who will finish top scorer in the Premier League this year?
Oof. If Van Persie keeps going like he's going, he's got a great chance. Van Persie, and I keep saying I think Torres is going to come out his dungeon and get goals. Tevez is playing well, so and Wayne when he comes back fit, he'll be up there as well. So it'll be a tough one. Toss up between them four.
Complete this terrace song from the banks of the River Irwell.
River Irwell.
Yeah, that's the start of the song. What's the end of it? From the banks of the River Irwell. To the shores of where? United fans sing it.
Yeah, no shit, I should know this as well.
From the banks of the River Irwell to the shores of... It's a big island near Italy. It's part of Italy.
Oh,
to the shores of...
Nah, it slipped my memory that, mate.
Sicily.
Yeah.
What's your favourite football champ?
Football?
Chant.
Chant? I don't know. I don't know, there's so many of them. But a lot of them go over my head now. Too busy laughing.
Plane, train or automobile?
Over the past year, I think I've done everything every 3 weeks, so any of them.
How many days do you spend away in a typical year now?
Away? I get so much stick from my pals to say I should go non-domicile. I would most probably say 60,
70. What's your golf handicap at the moment?
I've just dropped a shot now, gone down to 12, and I'm aiming to get to 10.
Who's the best golfer of the former players you played with?
Best golfer?
Yeah.
Oh, I honestly don't know.
David May?
Maisie's good. Maisie got a bandit handicap. I played with Jimmy Bullard played in the golf day I had. Jimmy's was like scratch. So there's some decent golfers out there for sure. But Maisie's a bandit. Blackie's decent as well. But he just talks too much about golf.
Clayton.
Talks your ears off. Clayton, yeah.
Butter or margarine?
If I have it, it'll be butter.
Who's the boss in your house, you or your wife?
My daughter.
PC, Mac or iPad?
iPad for me. Because it's easy. I'm not saying I'm a boff on all these kind of stuff. Because really, I've not got a clue. So I'm not getting my emails, I'm happy. So I'd have to say iPad.
Okay. How many Manchester United games will you get to this season? Is it true you've got season tickets?
I've got 2 season tickets, yes.
And you've had them since you quit playing?
Virtually, yeah.
Main stand?
Main stand with the dog outside, yeah.
And you just enjoy going as a fan?
Before I took the role on, I used to go as a fan. People used to look at me like I had 3 heads or something and say, oh, this Coley's watching the games. Yeah, I've got a killer Saturday afternoon now, retired.
Yeah.
You know, so I used to go in and watch the games and that, and my role's changed now. I'm at the club virtually full time. So how many games will I go to this season? Home and away? 30.
Wow. Did you see the story about Roy Keane going to try and watch Wigan last year and not being allowed to buy a ticket outside?
No, I didn't. Oh,
brilliant. Just decided he wanted to watch a match, turned up. They won't let him buy a ticket because he wasn't a member. He's got his hat on, he's got a scarf on, and he ends up falling out with the woman in the ticket office.
That sounds like Roy.
Just said he wanted to mind his own business and go and watch a game of football on a Saturday afternoon.
Brilliant.
What's the best place you've been recently on your travels with United? Because you did part of the tour, you were in America last year.
Yeah, we went to China. I think going to China now is different to when I was playing. You see more of it or whatever. So I enjoyed that. I enjoy travelling. I enjoy the cultures that I'm coming across now, meeting so many different people. It's been a real eye-opening experience for me.
And you speak to the young players in the team?
Yeah, every now and then. Mm. I'm a strange one because I try and keep my distance, you know, because I never, ever want people to think, oh, Coley's trying to hang on to his past at Manchester United or whatever. So I'm a bit funny that way. I say hi and whatever. If they come and talk to me, I'll talk to them, not a problem. But I never try and force myself upon anyone.
Hmm. But when you're on the tours and stuff like that, like when you're speaking to Welbeck, when you're looking at them from afar, do they seem to be a good set of lads to you?
Very, very. Yeah, you have a good laugh. Banter. I've bantered with them for sure.
Hmm. Who did you support as a kid?
Who did I support? Man United is my team.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed watching Man United when I was younger. I had a big thing as well, obviously, West Brom as well, because you had obviously Brendan, Cyril, Laurie, and then later on, Robbo played there, Remy Moses, and that. I don't know, growing up and seeing black players play, and seeing West Brom where they're at with a black player, that, I looked at that as a real, real big thing. Give me inspiration to crack on and be a footballer.
But that you could see black lads doing it at the highest level and doing it well.
Yeah. And West Brom were giving those guys the chance to do it. So yeah, infinity with West Brom, looking at West Brom saying, wow, couldn't black guys play for West Brom? That's fantastic.
I read an article about Laurie Cunningham recently when he came to Spain, and it said for 6 months of his career there wasn't a player like him in Europe who was that good.
Yeah, for sure.
What was he like? I didn't see him. I got a tiny recollection, but you're a few years older than me.
Mesmerising winger. Pace to burn, trickery. I mean, and then for someone like Lowe to leave England, go to Spain to play for Real Madrid, by the way. Hmm. You've got to be a decent player.
Did you ever fancy playing abroad yourself?
When I was young and playing, no. No, not really. But yeah, I turn around now and say to myself, wow, I would have loved to. Would have loved to have played, you know, played abroad and had the experience and learn a different language or whatever it may be. And sometimes we frown upon learning languages and say, well, if you don't speak English, well, forget about it. But I've changed so much now. Yeah, if I had my time again, I'd love to play abroad.
Whereabouts?
Spain. I love Spain. I think Spain's a fantastic place. And I look at the football. Italy's a great place as well. So you don't know, because these are ifs and buts now.
Did you ever have any offers to go abroad?
No. No. Little bits of talk or whatever maybe, but never any offers.
What's it like when you go back to Newcastle now? How are the fans there with you?
Well, I've not been back to Newcastle for a numerous amount of years. Some are decent, some you get a little bit of flack for. That's football in general. You take it on the chin. It's just, like I always say, that is no drama to me.
Yeah. And who are your closest friends from football?
I always pissing myself off. I've gotten well with everyone. I mean, it's not a case of, yeah, I grew up with someone and we went on for years and years or whatever, maybe. I like to be, if we ever see each other, we speak, we have a chat, we have a laugh and joke or whatever. I mean, because when you come away from football, if you don't really keep up with the football fraternity, people just go their way and do what they do.
Mm. But if you were getting married tomorrow and you had to invite five, what sort of people would be going? You always seem to be good mates with Michael Thomas, for example.
Yeah, Tomo will always be that. I've known Tomo a hell of a long time, ever since I was a kid at Arsenal. You know, and I mean, we're very good friends now. So, yeah, people like Tomo and, like I said to you before, I think people that ultimately understand me as a person, what I'm all about. Because you always get perceived in different lights or whatever. I'm very comfortable with people who know what I'm about.
Yeah. I'd like to thank you for your time, Andrew.
No problems.
You're still living in Manchester, aren't you? You always said that you were going to leave Manchester when you finished playing, or your wife was going to, but you've made it home now, haven't you?
We have at the moment, yeah. Until my wife makes that decision that she's ready to move back south again, you know, we'll be more than happy. I think the good thing is now the kids are growing up. Well, my son is 17 now, so you look at that decision again within the next, I don't know, 6 months, a year, and reevaluate and say to yourself, right, you know, as the biggest one growing up, is it time to make that move? So we'll look at that within 6 months to a year.
That's great. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's it for today's podcast. We'll be back next week. There's no football this weekend. Well, no United football because it's international weekend. The next United match is against Wigan at Old Trafford on Saturday the 15th. We're going to be starting work on the new issue of United We Stand. We've also started publishing United We Stand electronically. So if you want to read the fanzine on an iPad or a PC or a Mac or a phone or whatever, you can now download it online and take out a subscription that way. Until next week, goodbye.